One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than two decades of experience with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's Upwork.com. Upwork.com.
Hey, everybody. We got a great one today, you know, for a change. It's also a departure of sorts. Conan O'Brien and I have been friends for, I think, over 30 years now. And when I was in L.A. a little while ago, I was a guest on his late night talk show on TBS. He is now the dean of late night TV hosts. I think he's been 30 years host of the show, and it's so hard to believe because when he first started, everyone went, who the hell is this guy? Anyway, he's been a huge influence on comedy, and he has this unbelievably successful podcast, and he interviews a lot of comedians, and John Mulaney was on a recent one and talked about what an influence Conan was, not unlike Letterman, who is an influence on comedy. Conan has been a tremendous influence on comedians. And I did the talk show, and then immediately after, I went and did the podcast. The agreement we had was that we'd both post it. So what you're about to hear cost my team nothing. And if I must say, you're going to enjoy this. Now, you'll notice right away when you listen that there is a lot of laughter. And it's not just me and Conan. He has a few people in his studio there, including Sona Mosesian, who is his assistant at the show and has been his assistant at the show since he's come to L.A. And I've known her for a while because I've done the show. And she's great. And she and he have great chemistry. Sona's job, basically, is she gives him a lot of shit. And this is the part of the show where before the guest comes on. So you're not going to hear that. But hopefully, my doing this will steer a lot of my vast audience to Conan and his wildly successful podcast, and hopefully vice versa. But really, what Sona, and you will hear this, part of her job is she laughs. And if you listen to my interview with Dana Carvey about how we did political comedy at SNL, and this is not long after George H.W. Bush died, we were talking about how he got the impression. And one day we were sitting around. He just did a not going to do that thing over there. And I laughed really loud. And we talked about that. And Dana said that laughter is the oxygen of comedy. Now, you may have noticed that I'm alone. I don't have anybody laughing. And there's one advantage to that, which is that if I say something that I think is funny, no one can prove that it wasn't. Anyway, I think you're really going to enjoy this. Now, we've edited a little bit. We've taken out the parts where Conan talks to Sona and Matt Gourley, who is the producer of the podcast. Let's face it, you want to hear me, you know. But what you'll hear Sona laughing. We're all laughing. We had a great time. I know you're going to enjoy this one. And if you do and you haven't listened to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, you'd be there. I think he has like a million downloads per podcast. Anyway, so, but you gotta go check it out. So, but listen to this, and I swear to God, this is a great one for a change.
I met you in 1988.
88. So my math is correct.
Yeah.
31 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow. Jeez.
I was a punk kid. I remember very clearly my writing partner at the time, Greg Daniels, and I came to New York to right on Saturday Night Live, and I pitched something.
No.
And you laughed the Al Franken laugh.
Oh.
And I immediately relaxed. I thought we were going to get bounced out of there any second. And I pitched. We had a sketch.
You remember what it was? Yeah, okay.
It was about a lab professor. It was something I used to do for my friends. It's a lab professor. He'd be like, who had a lab skeleton. And he'd say, well, here we have, of course, the posterior patella. It is the thickest of the bones. And then he would look over the skeleton and go, oh, God, it's a skeleton. He got as scared every time. And you were howling. And then you came up to me and you went, I really like that. And I was
wait
just like,
a minute.
Well, I'm sorry. That's how you talk. Oh, wait, no, that was Roseanne Barr. Oh, and that was a T-Rex. But anyway, you were a generous laugher with me right away, and I remember that feeling great. I remember that feeling great.
If people aren't laughing in the office, or it's harder.
Right. It's interesting, too, because everything would be based on, you remember this, the read-throughs that we would do at Saturday Night Live. You did how many, I mean, if you add up all your years at Saturday Night Live, isn't it like 111? It's something crazy.
I did 15 seasons, so we did 20 a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's 300.
I've noticed so far you're really into numbers.
I was good at math and science, and I'm a Sputnik kid. I was born in 51, and when Sputnik went up, my parents marched me and my brother into the living room and said, you boys are going to study math and science so we can beat the Soviets. And I thought that was a lot of pressure to put on a six-year-old.
Did you really thought it was up to you guys?
Yeah.
In Minnesota.
We were literal.
Yeah.
A literal and obedient.
Yeah.
And so my brother was really, really good at it and went to MIT.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really good at it. And I, you know, went to another school that was very well thought of.
Yes, yes. I've heard of that school.
Yeah. And he became a photographer and I became a comedian.
Yeah.
But we beat the Soviets.
You know. You know what's nice? That you took that seriously, and then, yes, the wall came down. The Soviets were defeated.
Yes.
And then Sona married one. Isn't that right, Sona?
Yes, but he wasn't one of the Soviets you were fighting.
Well, in a way, yes, he was.
He was a child.
We were fighting them all.
He was a child, and he was, you know, grew up in the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
As a child. Then he came here.
Then
is
he
what
came
you're saying.
Here.
Yes. Okay.
When he was 11.
But Al, what I maintain is that when you fight the Soviets, you fight them all.
Nah.
And so, Tak, your husband, even as a small child, we were out to defeat Tak.
You were saying Tak was the enemy.
Yes, he was, and now he's not.
He was a child.
Well,
so I disagree with that.
He had a child's name. That I know.
Yeah. I can't remember his last name. But anyway, yeah, so I came to Saturday Night Live, and I was so scared, and then got to know you and Jim Downey right away. And that's the thing about Saturday Night Live that I was impressed with, is they throw you right into the deep end. There's no... You'd think that...
What is the deep end? It's like you got to write a sketch. Is that the deep end?
Yes. No, but what I'm saying is...
You've got to do your job, the deep end.
Okay.
But write a sketch.
Write a sketch. Go in and pitch to Steve Martin. Go in and pitch to Martin Short. Go in and pitch to... You've just come in off the street.
I know, but that's cool and a privilege. You're getting...
Yes, I think being thrown in the deep end is a good thing.
Ah.
Oh, God, this isn't going well.
I thought it was a pejorative.
Okay. This is just not going the way I wanted it to go.
Well, I had a couple of ideas, thinking back to the show. One is just...
this is my show, or Saturday Night Live. Which show?
Saturday Night Live.
When you say to me, the show, and I'm sorry, am I wrong, Gourley? If someone says to me like, hey, yeah, the show, I go, of course, Conan on TBS.
Right.
I think Conan podcast.
Oh, that's interesting. Sona, what do you think when you hear the show?
I know how you think.
You think Gigolos, don't
okay.
you?
Okay. Gigolos is no longer on the air, so...
Well, that's tragic.
I don't, yeah,
it's
it is
tragic.
It's
a show about actual male gigolos.
Is it a dramatic show? I mean, no. Is it acted out, or is it...
It's a reality show.
It's a reality show, that's what it's called.
It's softcore pornography. I'm not even kidding. Yeah, it's got a plot, and it's got certain gigolos it follows, but it's softcore pornography. I'm sorry.
Wow. How do you...
Anyway, back
how
to...
How does a show like that get canceled? Who said, we're not getting any interest in the softcore pornography?
How does that happen? I feel like the gigolos were pulling out.
No, Bill Nye Science Guy came up against us and just cleaned our clock. How does that happen? I have no idea.
I don't know.
But Al, you were going to talk about Saturday Night Live. What are the ideas you wanted to talk about?
Your favorite sketch that didn't make it.
Oh, that's interesting.
Isn't that, like, thought so?
I don't know if it's my favorite. It's the one that one of the ones that comes to mind.
Or the one that was most annoying to you that it didn't get on.
Yeah, there was one. I'll tell this. There's the disparity between how it did at read-through versus what happened to the sketch. So I had an idea. Do you remember Phil Hartman had a character named Mace?
Yes, of course.
And Mace was... I don't know that I can access the voice, but this incredibly tough,
right?
Toughest guy in the world. Like, I'm Mace. You'll mess with Mace. You're gonna mess with Mace, and I'm gonna Phil Hartman, one of the great SNL players of all time, could do anything.
The glue,
and he did this character that just was very funny, where he was Mace, toughest guy in the world, and so I had this idea that. Mace is in his cell, and the scene starts with, you know, a guard coming by, and he's like, that's right, screw, keep walking around, you know, and it's all how incredibly tough he is, right? And he's really tough, and then whoever the guest was that week, and I don't remember who it was, but let's just say it was Matthew Modine, they bring in, he's my go-to, I always say, if I say, like, look, if I'm ever murdered by, let's just say Matthew Modine. So then they put this prisoner in with him. And it's that classic thing where he's like, you're not going to screw with me. I'm the king of this cell block. See, I'm Mace. And the guy's like, whatever. I don't want any trouble. You bet you don't want any trouble. Because I'm going to rip you a new lungs and I'm going to feed them to you. And I'm going to shove them up your ass. Sun don't shine, buddy boy. And he does this whole thing. And the guy's like, then the guy lays down in his bunk. And Mace looks over, and there's the typical, there's a bunk bed, it's a jail cell for two, and there's one exposed toilet in the middle of the room. Uh-huh. And Mace is looking over, and it just becomes clear that Mace is shy about pooping. and so Mace is doing a lot of like, so maybe you, he's looking at the toilet, and he's starting to head that way, and the guy, Matthew Modine, is like, hey, if you gotta go, you gotta go. No, I don't have to go. And then he's saying things like, why don't you go to sleep? You look tired. You should probably go to sleep. Get a good night's sleep. That's the first thing you got to do when you get in prison. The guy's like, okay, yeah, I am a little tired. He starts to go to sleep. And the minute he thinks he's nodded off, Phil Hartman goes over, and then this was something Greg Daniels added that was really funny, which is he starts peeling off little pieces of toilet paper and putting them. He's very fastidious. And then Matthew Modine would wake up and he'd be like, and so this thing was Reddit read through and
killed.
And you know when a piece kills it read through, and people were like pounding the desks, the piano in the corners rattling, the acoustical tiles falling. I mean, like, just it was killing. And I afterwards, people were coming up like patting me on the back. It got applause. Lauren made eye contact with me briefly and then celebrated with a Tic Tac. And I was like, wow. And then all week long, people were like, oh, I can't wait for that. I can't wait for that. And then dress rehearsal. And they start to do it. Not a laugh. I don't know what happened to this day. Not a laugh. And it happens sometimes. But you know the way there's a thing, Al, where in a sketch, there's a trigger.
Uh-huh.
It's the trigger that's supposed to set everything else. The wonderful, all the laughs are to come need to be with that trigger. And when you hit that line and the trigger pulls and nothing happens, you know that you've got 9 more pages.
Right.
And none of that's going to catch.
Right.
None of it. And so I watched it just completely go down the drain. How about you? What's the? Do you have a sketch that you absolutely loved?
I have several. One, and Fart Doctor.
That's so stupid.
Say no more.
Fart Doctor has an interesting history and life to it because. Okay, this is what happens. So Al Gore.
What?
I just want to tell our listeners that I have a pen and a pad of paper, and I'm trying to draw. I'm just trying to figure out how one thing goes to another. Like, how does Al Gore and Fart Doctor? And it doesn't work. I'm telling you right now, it doesn't work.
So Al Gore is going to host, and I believe it's 2002. And he asked that I be a guest writer because we're friends. So I come and I think about it. I have some lead time. And so I write this sketch that Al Gore is not right for. Uh-huh. Okay, here is the premise. Okay, you have 3 of our cast members. I remember Amy Poehler being one of them. And they're waiting in a room. And I think Amy was the one who was very impatient and skeptical that this famous diagnostician who can diagnose diseases when no one else can was coming from Duke. And he's a little late. And she's kind of both skeptical and impatient. And there's one of the other doctors going like, no, I'm telling you, he's amazing. Okay. So whoever the host would be to play Fart Doctor, he comes in and he's read all the files, right, of all the different people. And so they bring the first patient in and these other doctors cannot figure out what is wrong with this guy. And so this doctor from Duke says to the patient, he says, okay, I'm going to need you to fart.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm.
And the guy says, what? I'm going to need you, you know, to fart. And so the guy tries and does finally squeeze one off. And the doctor says, your mother was Salesian?
Oh, my God.
Yes, yes. Did you have tabbouleh salad for lunch today? Yes, I did. You have very specific disease, and all the other doctors are going like, oh, of course. Why didn't we figure that? Oh, my God. That's brilliant. And the good news is that we know how to treat this, and you're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy is going, oh, thank you, thank you. Next patient comes in. I'm going to need you to fart. Skeptical, but farts. And he's going like,
skeptical, but
I'm glad that made it up. But just if you're listening to this right now, and you obviously are, skeptical but farts needs to be skeptical but farts.
Never been said before.
Oh, I forgot one beat. I forgot one beat is that after that first patient leaves, he takes out a little fan.
Uh-huh. Sure.
One of those little fans.
Yeah. Yeah.
And clears the air. Yeah. Okay. So the second one comes in and he goes like, very interesting. And like, could you fart again? And he takes out a beaker and collects this one because he wants to bring it back to dude. Oh my God. Then another guy comes in and he's just an asshole about it.
Yeah.
He's just a fucking asshole about being, you know.
Asked to do this.
Has to fart and he just... It's just a dick about it, and finally he does it, and it's like, you know what? I'm going to talk to you later, and then he leaves, and he says he's a dead man, and all of them are kind of like okay with that. They just never liked this.
Never liked this.
Yeah. So then the last person comes in. This is the final patient. Comes in and you have to fart. And the person really very valiant effort and can't do it. It's just can't do it. And then you hear a fart and he looks puzzled. And he goes like, wait a minute, that can't be your fart. You're half Austrian and just can't be yours. Well, and then Amy Poehler, the one who is so skeptical, says, that was me.
Right.
And he goes, we got to get you into surgery stat. Okay, now that's a good sketch.
Yes.
Okay. So now this
is... No, wait. You pitched this to... You wanted Al Gore...
No.
...to be fart doctor?
No. I knew that Al Gore was not right for fart doctor, okay? So here's what happens. I am not working at the show at this point. I'm doing other stuff. I just came in for Al Gore. But I'm going like, I've got a fucking gem here, fart doctor. And so while I'm not there, I'm going to submit it for read through, which is not a good thing to do. If you're not there. And
if you're not there and you submit it for read through, sometimes the writers that are there can feel... Right? That
they resent it maybe a little bit.
Yeah,
and they want their thing in.
Yep.
And so, but I'm thinking like, okay, Christopher Walken is a host. So I go like, okay, all right. Christopher Walken. I'll put it through with Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
And then, so it goes in and it doesn't get picked. And then another month later, I submit it again, and it doesn't get
So
in.
Now you know the writers. Every time Lauren says, all right, next sketch, fart doctor. And they're not there, and they know that this is the seventh week in a row that it's being read, and the pages are crumbling in yellow from age.
Yes.
They're irritated with you.
Okay, right. And Tina Fey was head writer, I think, at the time. And... So I stopped doing it. It never gets done. It just doesn't get done. So on 30 Rock, they refer to Fart Doctor very often. And, you know, what's going on the floor? They're rehearsing Fart Doctor.
Oh, that'd be...
You know, and
that's her homage to you.
Yeah, I mean, it made perfect sense to say. And then when she meets Matt Damon, and at first I think she in this show she pretends to be something else, and finally she admits that she's the producer and writer for this Comedy Variety show, and she says, "I." Right, fart doctor. And he goes, I love fart doctor.
So it found it found a life, you know?
Yeah, and then here's the thing. She never gave to any of my campaigns.
Well, in a way, she gave the greatest gift of all.
What?
She made fart doctor immortal.
Yeah, yeah.
It's playing all around the world constantly.
It is.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break. Let's just take a quick break.
Oh, sure.
We got some business to do. Just hang on. Sitting here with Al Franken.
Okay, before we cut to our break, I just want to address something. Because in our last podcast, I did a commercial parody for a magazine called Cigarette Aficionado. And I thought it was evident that it was satirical. And the whole point of it was to make fun of the idea that smoking tobacco is somehow glamorous and sexy. And I thought it was pretty evident that Cigarette Aficionado doesn't really exist. Some of the features were Ralph Nader at his $80 million Hamptons estate, dressed in Versace, and showing off his collection of vintage dangerous cars. And also, his favorite thing is his collection of old cigarette lighters. And we had a feature on smoked foods and stuff like that. I got some emails to my office, people who were outraged that I was taking tobacco money on the show. This was not real, is what I'm trying to say here. And I want you all to know that I would not take money from the tobacco industry and would not have an advertisement. If there were a real magazine called Cigarette Aficionado, I would not actually have them buy time on the show. You understand? Okay, let's go to a real break now.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
And we're back. Pretty cool, huh?
Okay, another one that didn't
this is get... another sketch. We're talking about sketches that that we love that didn't make it on Saturday Night Live.
Right.
And which one is this?
This, weirdly, is another doctor. And it's called That's My Oncologist. And it's a sitcom. Oh, it's like a 50s sitcom. And it's the song starts and there's a, you know, the montage of a sitcom. When it comes to cancer, he's got the answers. He's the best in the biz. But when it's Honey, I'm Home, he's thick in the dome. That's my oncologist. Bom, bom, bom. And so I submitted it once with a sketch kind of in it as
right.
the show.
Right.
And then I did a next week on, you know, and so the next week worked.
Right.
And the next week was, it's take your daughter to work week
mm-hmm.
or day.
Yeah.
And it's just, he's pointing to these x-rays, I guess, or whatever those
right,
are. And
right.
she's going, okay, he's a goner.
Oh, no.
Okay, this one is, it's in his liver.
How old's the daughter? The daughter's like 8, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And, oh, this is your teacher. And that killed.
Yeah.
And so I just said, okay, just take the sketch that isn't great
right.
out and just do that. And it didn't happen.
Here's one of the things, this just reminds me of something I wanted to ask you about, which is when I was watching Saturday Night Live along with everybody else, 75 to 80, mm-hmm. you and Tom Davis, I remember watching late one night and you did this sketch. You can remember this better than I can, but there was some sketch where you're doing something throughout this period of time and you're getting progressive. Is it you that's getting progressively sicker? Is it a tumor?
Is this the brain tumor comedian?
Yes, the brain tumor comedian. And it's your comedy. Yeah, just tell me. Because I remember watching that at home and howling. But it was so dark. And I remember at the time thinking, nothing this dark has been on television before. I mean,
yeah.
This is, you know.
Yeah. This was, so we had been doing the Franken and Davis show as a show within the show. And we were on when the show was short.
Mm-hmm.
So we right. when a lot didn't work and Lauren put us on in the last half hour. So, but we had been on a number of times. People knew the Franken and Davis show.
And you had like a cool
animated yeah.
animated of your faces. It looked like it's the Franken and Davis show.
Anyway, so we come out and I have this bandage, this huge head
right.
bandage
right.
with a big lump on the, you know, the bandage
yeah.
is, you know, adhesive tape around uh-huh. gauze, and my head's wrapped in it. And Tom says, Al has a brain tumor.
Right.
And he's always, you know, we're a team. But he's always wanted to do a monologue
right.
and then work alone, you know, just try that.
Right.
And I think that I'm really encouraging that because that's his dream.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to do that. And he's a little, he's not doing well. And so just laugh.
It was so eerie.
And so I go out there and tell the first, you know, have you heard the one about the rabbi who doesn't charge for giving circumcisions? He only takes tips.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
No.
And then Tom's going like, come on.
Tom's behind, yeah, please.
Tom's like, isn't that funny? And then from then on, I just, the punchline is always, he only took tips. And Tom is trying to encourage people to laugh. Yeah. And then, and I start to, at one point, I start to clearly just lose it, and I'm almost about to pass out, and he has a sponge and some water and just starts sponging with my face.
I have a memory, which I love to tell people, that stars you. Mm-hmm. And
I think, is this Harrison?
Yes, word gets out that George Harrison's in the building and he's down in Lauren's office, and I don't think you can be a bigger Beatle fan than myself. I know everything about them. I know the instruments. I know the chord changes, the whole thing.
You know the names of the songs?
Yes. I know some of the names of the members. Get hazy on the bass player. But we're there, and we're thinking, are we going to see him? And then finally George comes down the hallway, and we're all in the writer's room. And he comes in, and I remembered he had been out partying with Lorne, and he was a little tipsy. And
Lorne had gone out to dinner.
Yes.
So, and traditionally on a Tuesday night, now this is Tuesday night, the show gets written on Tuesday night.
And we stay up all night.
But it really, you know, starting, I don't know, 10 p.m. or something, things are actually starting to be written. And so, first of all, George Harrison shows up at around 8 and they go to dinner.
Yes.
And they don't come back until like 10:30. And Harrison's really drunk.
Yeah, he's tied one on. And this is what I remember very clearly. He walks in. We all stand up. He comes into those wide, it's double doors into the
writer's room.
Writer's area. And he's standing there, and he's sort of weaving from side to side, as one does when one's had a lot to drink. And he said, "I'm sorry. I'm pissed as a newt." I'll never forget that. He went, "Sorry, I'm pissed as a newt." And then he said, "What are you all staring at?" And we were all staring at him. And then he looks over in the corner and he sees a piano. And he goes over and he sits down at the piano and he starts to play the piano. So a Beatle is in a relatively small room with us, playing the piano.
Making music.
A Beatle is making music. Yeah. And all of us are transfixed. And I think he plays for about 20 seconds.
Nope.
Less. Maybe.
More.
Okay, more. All right, whatever. I'm being controlled. he plays more, but he plays for a while. And then you come out of your office and you said, "Quiet!"
Okay.
And then he gets startled and he gets up and scuttles away like a hobbit that saw an ogre. He's like, gets up and scuttles away, and you go back in your office. Did that or did that not happen?
A version of that. This is what happened, actually. First of all, he played for a lot longer than you remember. He played for a long time.
Yeah, not many people, when a Beatle is playing, go, "Hey, let's pick it up. Let's pick it up.
Well, the point is, we have a writing staff. We have a show that gets written now. And, you know, it's like 11. And he's playing, and he's playing quite a while.
Who the fuck cares?
Okay.
What is it? So that, you know, special today, this week, Rue McClanahan is on the show. Who cares? The show could have sucked that week. Who cares? We could have sat there for 6 hours and listened to George Harrison play and then just turned in. It could have been a whole show of one fart doctor after another with Rue McClanahan.
I didn't think of that, but this is prior to the existence of fart doctors.
I see. Okay.
Okay, so I had a role that year, which was, I think I was some producer.
Yes.
I was responsible.
You were being responsible.
Yeah. And no one is going to leave that room and work as long as George Harrison is playing the piano.
You have no one on your side in this room.
I know.
And I'll tell you something else. I think also that you had been working on the show since 75, and George Harrison had been around the show a lot. So you had spent a lot of time with George Harrison, whereas this was my
own. I hadn't spent a lot of time with George Harrison. I'd met him a couple times.
I thought you guys used to go antiquing.
No, we used to go to listen to light jazz in a gazebo.
What?
But here's the thing. I didn't say quiet. I went to Phil Hartman, and I said, and my office was very near the piano.
Yes, your office was the closest office to the conference room and the piano. Yes, yeah. I'll verify that.
Yeah. So I say to Phil, watch this. And I go into my office, so I don't see Harrison's reaction, but I'm told later what it was. I slam the door as hard as I can, and I knew that.
It sounded like an explosion, and he
jumped. Yes, I've been told it is 2 or 3 feet above the piano bench and then back to the piano bench.
He jumped up back to the piano bench. He's been drinking, so he's startled, afraid, and he gets up and runs away, and I don't think ever returned to America. I haven't looked into it, but I don't think he ever returned to America.
I do get shit from few people who were there.
But I bear you no ill will.
Okay.
But can I ask a question? Because you've told this story before. You say sort of made it seem like it was a joke, but were you really telling him to be quiet? Now I'm confused.
I think he was doing a bit of a joke. I think you were doing a bit.
But I think
you were also impatient.
I wanted us to have a successful TV show.
At any cost.
That was kind of my goal.
Right. Okay.
And he'd been there a while playing. I mean, he had been. And also, he was very drunk. And it wasn't. I'm not a music critic, but. I don't think it was.
Yeah.
I just don't think it was his best work.
Yeah. It was wheels on the bus go round and round, round and round. Wheels on the bus go round and round. All right, George. We could put a harmony in here with wheels on the bus. Yeah.
And, yeah, the Beatles gone. And guess what happens? They get to work.
Right.
And we write a good show.
I don't remember if it was a good show.
I don't either.
It may have been a slightly passable show. But I will say, absolutely fearless. I remember you not being intimidated by massive stars and just going right in. And I mean, were you always that way? Were you like that in 1975? Were you ever a scared pup? Or do you have any memory of that first show? Like how scary it was? We're doing a live show. Will this even work?
It was very unlike what the show became, because we had, I think, 3 musical acts or something.
And you had Muppets too, I think.
Oh, we had Muppets. We had a music act. The hit was Chevy and Update.
Yeah.
And the show didn't become the show until, you know, it started getting more like what it was. And Lily Tomlin, I think, was the first show that seemed like one of the shows. But, you know, it was George Carlin, I think, did 2 monologues or something. It was like Midnight Express.
Yeah.
But with more comedy focus.
I always try to point this out to younger people that are interested in comedy, is that nothing is what you think it was at the beginning. And a good example of that is watch a Simpsons from the first season. First of all, Dan Castellaneta, who does Homer, his take on Homer was that he should sound like Walter Matthau. And so it's a lot. If you watch the early ones, it's boy, now come here, boy. I'll get you dough. Well, Marge, we better. I mean, it's not. And the pacing is completely different. Yeah. It's radically different. And I always tell everybody that nothing, you know, people tend to think that everything just springs out perfectly. No. And that never happens. I mean, I think a good show is a living thing. I know that, you know, Lorne has told me that, you know, people used to say to him, starting with the second season, well, it's not as good as the first season. And he would think, no.
Saturday Night Dead.
Yeah. It was like, they started doing the Saturday Night Dead joke probably right away.
Second season.
Yeah. I guess it's that, what was it? It was like Arthur Miller or something said that, you know, he wrote Death of a Salesman and everyone was like, oh my God, this is the best thing ever. And then later on, he'd write his other plays and people would say,
It's not
Death of a Salesman. And then he'd write more and they'd go like, you know, it's just not Death of a Salesman. And then finally late in his life, he'd write something and people would say, you know, we've been thinking about it. Death of a Salesman isn't that good.
Actually, it was really good.
It's really good. Yeah. No, I know. But just if you stick around long enough, they'll pick everything apart.
I do my podcast alone. I'm like there's nobody in the studio with me except a climate scientist is on, and we're talking about obviously global warming and what we need to do. And he gets into the underdeveloped world, the poor countries of the world, the third world countries. And when their economies expand, that they're going to have to kind of skip a generation of energy. They're going to have to skip coal and go into, carbon neutral fuel and that kind of thing. And I said, well, how could we just get these countries not to develop? And he didn't laugh. He thought. Okay, for example. So we had former Energy Secretary Ernie Moniz.
I'm laughing already.
And he's on, and he's a great guy. And he actually negotiated all the technical aspects of the Iran nuclear deal. He's a brilliant, brilliant guy. He was the head of the physics department at MIT. And we're talking also about climate. And we have this discussion about whether natural gas is a transition or not. There's controversy about that. And he says it is. He says it is. And he says, for example, I work with Southern Company, which is this big utility in the South. So I say to him, you're working for the man. And he goes, well, or the woman.
He doesn't know the phrase. Maybe he didn't know the phrase.
That's exactly what happened. He's not like, he just didn't know the phrase working for the man.
Yeah.
And I think he's like 5 years older than me or something like that. And people 5 years older than me know the phrase working for the man.
Yes.
But I think he was studying physics.
He's trying to fix the world. He's busy trying to save our planet from a global disaster.
Yeah, so he didn't.
And you're angry that he's not up on his.
I'm not angry.
I know.
I'm not angry. I'm going like, I really respect him. I think he's a great. He was a great public servant. He's a great mind, and he's a tremendous asset to this country and the world. But I just kept making fun of him. hey, can I get you to do? I know you're over, but we can.
Yeah, well, you do, of course. Yeah,
stuff. You know how to cut.
No, I don't. But this guy does.
Okay, so
you'll chop this up any way you want.
Yeah. And okay, so we had a rewrite table,
yes,
right, on Thursdays. We rewrite, and the Bush Dukakis debate.
All right. Yeah.
And, you know, for those who don't remember, Dukakis was probably about, 5'6" or something?
Yeah.
And Bush was like, I don't know, H.W. Bush was like 6'1", 6'2".
Yep. A lot in the news that Dukakis was, could he stand on something?
Right.
And the camps were going back and forth, like, well, it can be one apple box, but it can't be two. It, you know, maybe it can be one step, but not a step and a half. And they were negotiating. That was in the news.
So we're looking for a joke, you know, some way to do this. And we get it from Conan, only because he does sound effects.
Right.
Or this sound effect, which is a hydraulic lift.
Yeah.
So if you look at the piece.
It was John Lovitz's Dukakis.
John, hilarious Dukakis. And he kind of gets behind the podium. Mm-hmm. And he gets, and you see him like get ready, mm-hmm. and then, for it.
I remember pitching this in the room. Yeah, yeah.
And then the then it goes up. It kind of I can't do it. I'm going to have you do it, and then it goes too high.
Right,
but it goes like a.
He has like a lever, and yeah.
No, he doesn't have a lever. Oh, maybe so somebody,
someone else is doing it.
Someone else is doing it, but he is. He played it so beautifully because he is trying not to, Dukakis is trying not to react. But he goes up
he's
too
high.
He's
being humiliated and he's trying. So what I did in the room was just like, what if he gets behind the podium and then you just hear. And grinding of gears and pitching, ching, ching, like an elevator or something.
Well, it kind of goes up and it goes. Goosh.
Yes, goosh. And then and Al was doing that laugh.
Yeah.
And that, I was happy that day. That was a day where, because I used to go back to my apartment, which was in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And this is 1988. And this is back when you, again, things are not what they were. Williamsburg, Brooklyn in 1988 was a scary place to live. Height of the crack epidemic. It's not the Williamsburg of today where there's just...
And why did you live there? I know it was less expensive than living in a safe place.
I didn't know anything. And also, I had not lived really in New York before. And I was coming from Los Angeles where I had started my career. And I didn't know. And so I had a friend, this woman, Lynette Cortez, who over the phone... I said, I just need to find a place to live in New York. I just got hired at Saturday Night Live. And she said, come live. I have an extra – I live in a townhouse, and there's a room here that you could have. And I live in Williamsburg. And I was thinking Colonial Williamsburg. I really was thinking like gas jets and cobblestone streets and people churning butter. And I said, that sounds fantastic. And then I got my brother Neil to drive me, and we showed up in early February of 88, pitch black, freezing. And we get off the Williamsburg Bridge and start heading south. And then we get off, and it's just looked like a – like one of those post-apocalyptic movies of burned-out cars, and all the streetlights were dark. And someone said later on, they told me, yeah, the crack dealers shoot out the streetlights.
Oh.
So everything was dark.
Smart.
And I keep thinking, what is this? We got off on the wrong thing. And my brother Neil is saying, no, this is Berry Street. This is, and then finally the car starts to slow down. And he goes like, yeah, it's 242, 240. And I'm like, no, this can't be it. This can't be it. And then he comes to a stop. And it was a scary, scary place to live. And I remembered coming to work one day, and I used to take the L. I had to walk 8 blocks, I think, north to get to the end of the L. I went and got Fry boots with giant heels, and I would wear a trench coat because I thought that it would make me look tougher. And I would have a cigarette coming out of my mouth because I thought this would make me look tough. But I'm not a tough looking guy.
And this like two kids in a raincoat.
Yes, exactly. I looked like a 1930s movie where three kids try and get into a movie as an adult. You know, quiet, you're on my shoulder. Shut up.
We'd like to see the movie.
It was terrifying. And then I came to work, and I remember you were just listening to us chattering, and you're doing something. And then you just heard me say, yeah, no, I just came in from Williamsburg. And you went, what? You live in Williamsburg? And I went, yeah. And he said, you got to get out of there. You're going to fucking die.
Yeah.
I did. And
how
I did.
Long did
I was not there long. Right after you told me that, I got out, and I moved to 18th Street. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So thank you. You saved my life.
Okay. Well, there you have it.
Yep. There you have it. You know what? This has been a joy. It's very nice having you here and laughing our asses off. And let's do this again. This is really fun.
Yeah.
What do you mean? But what was that? That wasn't.
I was going like, I wonder when we could do it and how you do that? Do you do that? You had Dana.
Yeah.
And there were a couple times.
It could happen again, you know? You never know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Well, what a terrible ending. It's an awful ending to an interview. Just a sort of...
I think it's like a little... Like a wind down.
It's a wind down.
Yeah. What do you think?
To be continued.
Isn't that...
To be continued. Yeah. Yeah.
Not the way you want to...
Yeah.
Go do it. Yeah.
Voice is getting really...
Oh. Good night, everybody. Good night.
Al Franken, thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing. We'll talk again next week.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.